One of the worst effects of undiluted European federation, sometimes expressed in the outworn idea of a third power, as between Russia and the United States, or a third force, is that it encourages such dangerous dreams as that Europe may one day manage without America, that America may relapse into a comfortable or to uncomfortable isolation. I say there, on facts of economics, raw materials and everything else, neither can exist alone and challenge criticism. It's too late for Europe to try and replace America as the world center of the 20th century. The issue was decided 150 years ago when the American Revolution succeeded and the French Revolution failed. When Alexander Hamilton united America and Bonaparte failed to unite Europe. For Europe to try to do today what she missed doing 150 years ago is a hopeless attempt to put the clock back. The time for continental power politics has gone by as irretrievably as that of national power politics. The theme of the century is world unity, and the nucleus round which world unity can crystallize cannot be anything less than the Atlantic Community, uniting North America and Western Europe, and linking them through the Pan-American Union with South America, and through the Commonwealth with Africa, Asia, and Australia. In other words, what I'm saying in a few words to finish is this. We are facing 1950-1960, something far more fundamental than a Cold War. We're engaged with forces which are permanent. Forces of hunger, forces of population, forces of technical know-how. But with methods which are of the devil. As I have seen with my own eyes in the streets of Vienna and the mountains of Greece. I've seen things, I've seen people wrapped up in a blanket and taken away in a lorry, never seen again. I've seen a good many other things, but they've burned into me that this cannot go any further and that we can stop it going further if we're united. That you cannot fight these forces with three foreign policies, antiquated political machinery, and rusty minds. Events have overtaken political organization. It must be clear to any child now that neither a European army as such, nor an ad hoc army slowly mustered by the United Nations, can be effective against the global strategy of the Kremlin. We've now got to make, in my opinion, and I put before you this before you, in great humility, because who is the man who really knows the answer today? All that I say is that anybody in public life who merely gives a lecture without any suggestions lays himself open to the criticism that he hasn't thought possibly the thing through. I therefore come to this conclusion that we must make a mental leap in our imagination and we must demand something more than the mutual cooperation of sovereign states. European federalists like France, Germany, and Italy, and Belgium, and Greece are never averse to a wider form of federalism. No federalist ever is. Britain and Scandinavia will never enter a purely European federal structure, partly because of ties with the Commonwealth and partly because of ties with the North Atlantic Community. The Norwegians say we've got more in common with North America than we have with Portugal. Which is understandable. And therefore the moment has arrived for a larger and more clear-sighted view of the whole picture. If the youth of Europe, and I've seen something of them, I suppose I've been in most universities between Oslo and Athens. I was in Athens this week last year. Just off. If the youth of this country, and I've been to a good many universities now, and to quite a few schools in New England. But the boys of 17 and 18, believe me, ask more awkward questions than anybody else. If the youth of the Commonwealth are to be animated and challenged, the magic of leadership must offer positive policies, supranational authorities, and in my opinion, a spiritual rededication. Because I said you couldn't oppose this with purely economic weapons. It is my personal experience, for what it's worth, that the people, whether in Oslo or Athens, in Manchester or Florence, in Cleveland or Sydney, in Chicago or in Glasgow, are saying much the same thing. But they have no organs. They have no channel to express their desires. They've only got their national governments, which are all in a political deadlock. It's no accident that there is an internal political deadlock in my country, and if I may be so bold as to say, something a little like it here. Dinner in the Senate. We've got our vital differences on economics and planning, social and economic questions, who shall go to parochial schools. These are all questions which we can afford to discuss and debate in our internal government. But governments today are powerless to act. They're immensely busy with the day-to-day routine feeling. Their way towards joint boards and raw materials and joint defence schemes is being slowly worked. But I think the time has come for something more. And this is the suggestion that I put before you in the last 2 minutes. I think the time has come, as it did in the spring of 1948, for the peoples to speak to the people. My proposition is very simple and very clear. I suggest that an Atlantic Congress be called on the same lines as the Hague Congress of the European people. Called by the European movement and by the comparable bodies in the United States and in Canada. And called in the name of men like Winston Churchill, Paul-Maurice Spaak, Renault, de Valera, comparable Scandinavians, Germans and Italians, together, and I wouldn't dream of mentioning who they should be in this country, Americans and Canadians. I have a number of names which I have submitted in a memorandum which I won't mention tonight. What are the objects of this Congress? Two. First of all, to dramatize our Atlantic world. It needs it. Politics needs dramatization. To give a reassurance to the Americans that the Europeans mean business. That's necessary. And if I may say so, after one or two speeches that I've listened over here, a reassurance to the Europeans that the Americans mean business. You and I in this country understand those speeches as part of your great debate. But believe me, speeches when they go over the Atlantic get very much changed. As I could tell you from certain speeches which have gone both ways. Therefore, I think there needs to be a reassurance both ways. Dramatization. Number one. Number two, demand supreme organs for defense and for foreign policy. The appointment of General Eisenhower is a God-given occasion for making such demands. It is necessary to dramatize the world's fate and show the Russians that there is a common faith animating the 450 million people who derive their way of life from the Christian and the humanist tradition. Let every bona fide international body be represented as they were at The Hague. Rotarians, teachers, Christians of all denominations, employers and employed, universities and colleges. Let it be held at Quebec or Brussels. I care not. But let it have the highest priority. The problem of organization is not a major difficulty, believe me. Meanwhile, if nothing happens, a half a dozen organizations will continue to spread their resources, appeal for funds, and bewilder the much abused people. Now, in my opinion, is the time for decision. Once to every man and nation comes the moment to decide, as one of your great poets wrote. And if I remember the lines, it goes on afterwards, and the choice goes by forever, twixt that darkness and that light. Can we learn nothing from Korea? Can we not learn that the communist idea of Cold War includes large-scale military operations against Western spheres of interest? That the great powers can be involved without direct contact with Soviet Union? That these operations only weaken the free world and put them at a disadvantage on the ideological plane? We are called the aggressors, and they, if you please, the liberators. We know the technique. Finally, the Soviets trying to call the bluff of the West. I say that if we've learned something from that, we'll know that it is quite impossible for General Eisenhower to be responsible to 12 defense ministers, who in turn are responsible to 12 foreign ministers, who are in turn responsible to 12 governments, any one of which could contract out. I think it's not fair to that great general who commands universal respect, certainly in my country and throughout Europe. And here, unparalleled. Who knows what would be born out of such a Congress? What latent energies might be revealed? The governments need a mandate from all the peoples if they're to act. Today, I think we must give every citizen within the Atlantic community the chance of adopting a positive faith in freedom and in free institutions. This, to my mind, is practical politics, not a blueprint utopia. All that's required is faith, resolution, and leadership. And I believe that only a ringing challenge of this kind is likely to appeal to the youth of the free world.